Catholics are called to share the gospel with the world, but what happens when our ability to share the truth is restricted by big tech and the rest of the woke axis? How should we respond? How should we practically share that gospel when we're being told not to? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. So I want to encourage people to like and subscribe to the channel wherever you might watch it, wherever you might listen to it. That helps other people know about it. Also, we stream live normally on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Odyssey, and Float. However, this episode, we're only streaming live on Odyssey and Float. And that's because we're going to be talking about things that might get us kicked off or canceled on the big tech ones, such as YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. So I just thought I'd rather be safe than sorry. I thought I would just go ahead and just put us on Odyssey and Float for this. Now, for those who are just listening to the podcast, it's going to be the same because at least as of now, the audio podcast platforms aren't really censoring very much. So this will go on those different platforms as well. So you can follow us on all the different social media channels at Crisis Mag. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about our subject for today. There are certain things that you just cannot say anymore on the big tech platforms. Some examples would include anything against transgenderism, like, for example, calling somebody who is a man who claims to be a woman, calling that person a man. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to say anything against the COVID regime as long as they tell you you're not allowed to say it. So you couldn't say anything about that mask mandates don't work or the vaccines aren't really effective or anything like that. Now, then later they do allow you to say it, but they'll cancel you and just delete your account if you had said that before the current narrative, the woke axis, allowed you to say it. You also can't really talk against the narrative being told about the war in Ukraine. Anything that goes against the current narrative on that, you'll also be canceled for that. So the fact is, though, so we know this. I mean, this is not something new to anybody. I don't think who's listening to this. We know that we're being canceled on big tech. Various viewpoints are not allowed. And that they will censor anything that goes against the current narrative, which is what I call it. I wrote an article about this for Crisis last week called about the current narrative, how we're being brainwashed. Frankly, a lot of Catholics are being brainwashed to have to accept exactly what our media masters tell us to say. Now, this has been happening directly to Crisis and to myself recently, and it got me thinking about this. Some examples include, I believe Crisis, for example, is being shadow banned by Facebook. It's very hard to prove shadow banning because the fact is what shadow banning is, for those who aren't exactly clear what it is, basically what the platform does, it just doesn't allow what you post to reach people. It will reach some of your most devoted fans, but it won't reach very far beyond that. Now, Facebook has always been awful in this. If you have a page, a public page there, and people like your page, that doesn't mean they will see your content. Those people have to interact constantly with your page in order to see it. So if Crisis Magazine, for example, has about 30,000 likes on our Facebook page, but when I post something on the Crisis Facebook page, it doesn't mean 30,000 people see it, or however many of those 30,000 are actually actively on Facebook. That doesn't mean they'll see it. In fact, a very small fraction of that will actually see it, even in the best of times, even when you're not being shadow banned, which is just unbelievable to me that if I decide to like a page on Facebook, that means I want to see their content. And if I stop wanting to see their content, I'll unlike the page. But that's not how it works. And that's a lot of that's driven by the fact that they want people to pay for the various, they want them to pay for boosting your content. And that's how they make money. So I can understand that on some level. But with shadow banning, they will restrict even more how much people see it. So for example, if one of our followers shares one of our posts, their followers won't see it. Their friends on Facebook won't see it. We've seen this happen time and time again where people will, our followers will share a Crisis article on Facebook and essentially nobody sees it, that they share it. None of their friends actually see it, the link at all. And we've had a few cases recently where we've had articles that actually criticized, one was one that criticized Facebook itself And it got a number of shares early on, which means our most devoted followers shared it quickly. But the people it reached was minuscule compared to most of our posts, which just means they're not letting people see it, even though we have users sharing it. So that's one example of this big tech trying to shut people down who are speaking things against what they want you to say. Another one happened to me recently, just last week. I tweeted out a... hold on a second. Oh, there we go. I tweeted out on Twitter. I put the tweet, just a reminder, homosexual activity is a sin. Transgenderism is a mental illness. Abortion is murder. Now, I think, and that and my account was locked soon after that for violating the rules against hateful conduct, which Twitter says, you may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of, and their whole litany of things you can't do it. One of them is gender identity. And of course, nothing in my tweet promoted violence against, threatened, or harassed people of that category. I assume it's the transgender one, saying that's a mental illness that got me locked out. And so I kind of knew when I posted this that that would likely happen, but I just wanted to see. And in fact, what's interesting is that tweet, it was only up for a few hours and it had almost 1,000 likes before it was taken down by, I actually don't know exactly how many it was approaching 1,000 when I went to bed, and then it was shut down overnight. And so it just shows that there's a lot of people on Twitter who obviously agree with what I'm saying here, but yet Twitter does not want this to get out there. And so they locked out my account for that. What's interesting is that Parler, which is a alternative to Twitter, they also marked it as, they didn't lock my account, but they marked it as trolling content detected, and they covered what I wrote, which I thought was interesting because Parler is kind of a joke. I've been on for a while and I have over 2,000 followers on there, yet every time I post anything, I get no response whatsoever. I have a lot fewer followers on other alternative media like Gitter or Gab, and they get a lot more interaction than anything I do at Parler. So I just decided to give up on Parler. I was interested. It was interesting that they did that. Another thing that happened recently for Crisis is we got an email from Google Ads. And I think it was a generic email sent out to a lot of people. It said from the Google Ad Manager, to dear publisher, due to the war in Ukraine, we will pause monetization of content that exploits, dismisses, or condones the war. I think it's very interesting. The word dismisses is very interesting. I understand maybe exploits. I mean, that's very generic. Condones the war, honestly, I don't think they should pause monetization of somebody who condones war. Not that somebody should condone the war, but I don't see how that should matter to Google. But the dismisses is interesting. What do they mean by dismisses? And it just, it says this pause includes, but is not limited to, claims that imply victims are responsible for their own tragedy or similar instances of victim blaming, such as claims that Ukraine is committing genocide or deliberately attacking its own citizens. Well, here's the thing. I don't know if Ukraine is committing genocide or deliberately attacking its own citizens. In fact, I didn't even think of that until they put this in the email. I wouldn't even consider that. But why is that not allowed to be a claim? Why cannot somebody claim that? Because what if it is true? I mean, like, again, I didn't even think of this as a possibility. But are we really saying a country can't do that? Is Ukraine so pure and noble that it can't do that as well? I just think it's one of these situations, again, where big tech is saying what you're allowed to say. This, to me, sounds very much like people saying you can't claim the vaccine doesn't stop COVID from spreading, which, of course, we found out later, it doesn't stop COVID from spreading. But they demonetize people who would make those claims. And so it's just interesting. I think it's silly to think that Ukraine is committing genocide, but deliberately attacking its own citizens, who's to say there aren't soldiers in the Ukrainian army doing that at certain cases? Maybe they're going rogue or something like that. It's so generic, this email, what they're saying they won't allow is, what they're basically saying is, if you don't go along with the current narrative, we're going to demonetize you. So it restricts, it censors what is being said. Now, this whole big tech censoring things has been a problem for a number of years. And I really think it really flared up, I think, after Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016. Because before Donald Trump won, what we found, it was interesting, in the 2012 election, President Obama was praised for how much he was able to use social media to his benefit. And everybody talked about how great he was, how he was just cutting edge. He used Facebook and various things to promote his campaign in just a great way. But when Trump did the same thing, it was a matter of disinformation. It was a Russian plot and all these crazy things. And so there was this big effort to stop fake news, stop misinformation on social media. And really what it was, I mean, it sounded very noble, like we're going to keep people from misinforming people, using lies to deceive people on big tech in order to protect our users. But really, we all know what it actually was. It was an effort by big tech to say, okay, we have a narrative we're going to push, and anything that goes against that narrative, we're going to hide, because we can shape the story then. We can decide what people think. We can decide what people know about. In a way, for those of us who are old enough to remember this, it's like hearkening back to the 1980s, when you had three networks telling you the news and a few major newspapers, and most newspapers were on board with this, telling you what the news was and telling you what to think about it. And that's what you heard all the time. You didn't hear a diversity of opinions, a diversity of thought. So when the internet came in the late 90s, a lot of us thought this is great, because now we actually have a diversity of opinions. I remember when Drudge Report became huge, it just caused so much consternation among big media, because here was somebody saying something different. And I think that's really been a great thing about the internet. But in the past 5 or 6 years, there's been such an effort to restrict the flow of information, restrict what's being said. And then COVID, of course, accelerated everything. It seems like all the bad things in our society, our culture, were accelerated by COVID. This is definitely an example of something that was accelerated by COVID, is that now there was this whole push that, oh, if we allow this information out, grandma's going to die, millions of people are going to die, so we cannot allow people to say these things that the CDC doesn't approve. Now, we've seen that the CDC had a terrible track record, was wrong about everything, including Dr. Fauci being wrong about just about everything. And so it just shows that this effort, their stated purpose, which was to protect lies, didn't actually happen. When I believe that their real purpose was to just tell people what to think, to control us. Now, some good news just happened this week. This happened after I'd already decided what I was going to talk about in this podcast. And that was Elon Musk. He bought, I think it was $3 billion worth of Twitter stock, which is like 9.2%. And he became the largest single shareholder. Now, I think there are some investment companies that own more, but as far as a single shareholder, he has the largest stakeholder now. And it was just announced today that he became a part of the board of directors of Twitter. And so this is a great thing in a lot of ways. Not that Elon Musk is some hero of ours. I mean, he's not some Catholic hero. He's got a lot of ideas that I'm sure are terrible. But it's great news in the sense that he does seem to be against censorship. And so hopefully there'll be a push at Twitter to reduce how much they regulate what content is allowed and isn't allowed. Now, I still think it's unlikely he's really going to change too much of what Twitter does. I don't think you'll have that much of an impact, but I do think it's a good thing. Now, why does this matter to us as Catholics? I mean, I know conservatives kind of get it, but I think just as Catholics, we should get why this matters. Because the fact is that as long as big tech is censoring, these big tech platforms are censoring content, and we know where they stand on so many issues, they're going to censor Catholic truths. Truths that are really truth for anybody, but specifically Catholics are the ones who are most pushing these ideas. And I mean, a great example is the transgenderism, is we can't talk about that. Transgenderism is a mental illness. Now, I do think there are a lot of people actually who are claiming to be transgendered out of a peer kind of a social pressure. But the fact is, anybody who is born a man and thinks they're a woman, or born a woman and thinks they're a man, there is something wrong with their head. Because obviously, insanity, one of the basic definitions of it is you don't recognize reality. You don't accept reality. So if I started banging my head on this table in front of me over and over again, you'd be right to think I might have a mental illness, because I don't recognize reality that this is harmful for me. This is not a good idea to do. Or if I said there wasn't a table in front of me, I just refused to accept its reality, there'd be a good reason to think that there's something mentally ill with me. Likewise with transgenderism. If I'm a man, I say I'm a woman, there's something wrong with my head. And we need as Catholics to be able to say this because that's the first step in helping people. Somebody who has a mental illness needs to be helped. But we can't help them if we can't even get them to recognize that they have a problem. And you're not allowed to say on big tech anymore that transgenderism is a problem, that something is wrong with a person who thinks they are a sex that they're not. And another case where this matters is obviously with all the COVID stuff, the facts about the vaccine. Now, I think personally, the vaccine, first of all, we know the vaccine is tainted by abortion. We know that all the vaccines that were available in America were tainted by abortion. Now, in general, I did not see big tech censoring that information. But even trying to say, hey, does everybody need the vaccine? Do five-year-olds, for example, need the vaccine? Is the vaccine actually stopping the spread of COVID? Even asking those questions got you deplatformed by big tech. But I think it's important because obviously we want, as Catholics, we want people to be safe. We want them to be not to die from the disease if possible. And so by spreading lies about the vaccines, which was what people were doing, what big tech was doing, and not being able to combat that, that's not being able to be charitable to our fellow men, brothers and sisters. Also, the whole situation with Ukraine. Now, here's one I know a lot of my listeners might not even agree with me on. And my position has been very clear. I'm not claiming that Putin is some Christian crusader. I'm not claiming that Russia is in the right. Actually, to the contrary, I think it was unjust. I made it very clear over and over again that Russia should not have, it was unjust for them to invade Ukraine. However, I really do think that a lot of the narrative that's being pushed by the media, by big tech, is leading us to a greater conflict. We have suffering and death in Ukraine. Do we really want to spread that to the rest of the world? Because that's exactly what the path we're going down. We're going down a path. If you look at the history of World War I, for example, you have a localized conflict that should have stayed localized. But because of treaties and agreements between various world powers, it became one of the worst wars in the history of mankind. Do we really want that again? I mean, not that I want a war in Ukraine, but I'd rather have a war in Ukraine than a war in Ukraine and everywhere else. But if you suggest anything that goes against the narrative that we're supposed to just immediately think of Ukraine as a perfect, immaculate democracy that America has to defend, and Russia as the great evil that has no legitimate concerns in this area, and they have no legitimate concerns against NATO or anything like that, then we're going to lead us all to World War III. And a World War III is something we don't want to get into because it could be a nuclear conflict. Now, somebody might disagree with me on that. And they might think, yeah, we should go to war with Russia over this, whatever. And that's fine. But we should be allowed to talk about this on the different platforms where we engage with other people. The number one place where we engage with our fellow human beings, fellow men and women, is on social media at this point, on big tech platforms. We should be able to talk about that. So what should Catholics do? That's kind of like what I'm leading up to is, what should Catholics do in this situation? I think I want to give some practical suggestions, what I think we should do and what we're trying to do here at Crisis. First, I want to say, I think it's okay to stay on the big tech platforms. I know there are Catholics who think that we should get off them. We shouldn't support them because they're getting ad revenue by us being on them. And we should not support them in any way because of the evil they do. And I just want to make it clear that, I do think that Twitter, Facebook, these different big tech platforms are used for evil, and they are in fact evil. However, I do think it's good for us to be on them. And here's why. First of all, I don't think it's immoral any more than using, for example, let's say you use Verizon. Let me tell you, Verizon does some bad stuff. They support some bad stuff. Do you use Verizon for your cell phone? There's a lot of different things we use. I'm talking specifically about these different platforms. Like, I'm not saying you have to buy a phone from Apple because Apple does a lot of bad stuff, even though Apple does a lot of bad stuff. But I am saying that there are certain things that we can't get around. For example, the roads we drive on are maintained by the government, which does a lot of evil stuff. I imagine probably the phone coming to your house or the internet connection or the even the water or whatever it might be is used by people, is maintained by people who do a lot of evil things. So to me, I look at Facebook and Twitter and these companies as platforms that are almost public. Now, they're not run as public they're kind of private, public, pseudo, both. So I do think it's okay to be on them. And I do think it's even okay to kind of tone down some of your more controversial takes on those platforms. So for example, like this podcast right here, I'm not putting up on YouTube. I'm not putting up on Twitter and Facebook because I fear, to be honest, I'm afraid that it will get knocked down. Now, is that a compromise? Yes, absolutely it is. But to me, I feel like these platforms are where most people are. Most people online are on these social media platforms, the big tech ones like Twitter and Facebook. And so this is how we can reach people. So if we have most of our content there and then some of the more controversial takes off on other platforms, I think that's okay because we can reach people with our with a lot of our content, and then we can tell them, hey, go to our other the other platforms to see some of our full content, so to speak. I think that's okay because the reality is we cannot change the fact overnight that most people, there are just exponentially more people on Facebook and Twitter than there are on Gab or Gitter or MeWe or Odyssey or anything like that. And so that's how we can reach out to them, is being on those platforms. I don't think, by the way, this I should be clear about too. I don't think you should say things that aren't true, obviously, on Facebook. Don't say transgenderism is okay. You just simply just avoid saying that's a mental illness or whatever. And it's, I think that's prudent, can be prudent. It can be practical to do that. Not that you have to be on these platforms, but I don't think it's immoral to be on them. And it can be very good actually to be on them. So that's the first thing we can do, is stay on the big platforms, but moderate our speech at times. The second thing is to use alternative media outlets, like, for example, Odyssey, like Float. We're also on Float. That's a very not as well known of a platform, but we're actually streaming live on Float now as well. Gab, Gitter, Parler, I think is a lost cause, but that was one. And so I do think those are good to be on, but there are some downsides to that. Number one, just not as big of an audience. Number two, it's a more homogenous audience. The fact is, like on Gab, I think Gab is probably the best of them, of the alternative ones, because it has the most interaction. I've noticed that even though I don't have a ton of followers there, I get much more interaction there than I do on other ones, other alternative media. And I think the problem with homogenous audiences, you can't really reach out to them that much. Now, hopefully, because it's mostly politically conservative, we can reach out to them on certain things where Catholics might disagree with the more prominent politically conservative people. I think of like a Dave Rubin, who is, he's gay and he's supposedly married to his husband, and they're having these surrogate kids and things like that. We can challenge that, but we can't really challenge the Father James Martins or just the regular Catholics who buy a lot of heretical things from like the German bishops, things like that. So while it's not bad, it's not perfect. I would also say another problem with the alternative sites is they all most of them, I should say, like a Gab or a Gitter or in MeWe, are centralized. What that means is they are still controlled by a small number of people or one person, wherever the case may be. And so they can be compromised. We see this with Parler. It's already having Parler. Also DuckDuckGo, the search engine that was supposedly be the free speech kind of alternative to Google. They announced recently they're downranking any Russian disinformation. And again, you might think Russia does put out a lot of disinformation, but I think it's very scary when the search engine starts downranking things because of their political opinions, because we know that will happen to us eventually as Catholics. And so anything centralized that can happen to. So as great as Gab might be right now, there's no reason to think that they wouldn't necessarily at some point start to censor as well. In fact, I think it's likely that the government probably is who told DuckDuckGo to do that. And so the government can put a lot of pressure on people. So they could put a pressure on Gab or Gitter as well to tell them, stay out of this, you know, downvote this. Don't go along with this disinformation, go along with the narrative. So I think they have limited usefulness, the alternatives. I'm going to be on them. I think Crisis is going to be on them. I think we should be on them when we can, but we have to recognize their limited reach. One I will mention alternative media is Telegram. I think Telegram is the best right now. It's not great as far as a platform goes, because it's more of a messaging platform than like a social media platform. But as far as not censoring things, Telegram has been the best. That doesn't mean it won't eventually also be compromised. So that's the second option. So we stay on the big tech, but we moderate we say whatever we want on alternative centralized platforms, but recognize their limited reach. A third alternative is the decentralized platforms. I think this is the best option long term. Right now, they're very limited because there's just not a lot of people on them. The ones I'm thinking of right now are Odyssey for video sharing, the YouTube alternative, Float for a Twitter alternative. That's F-L-O-T-E, F-L-O-T-E, Float. For search engines, pre-search is an alternative there. And the reason I like these is because they are much more censorship resistant. Now, why is that? I'm going to do a real quick explanation for those who might understand what I mean by decentralized and centralized. An app like Twitter has servers that they control at multiple locations, but they control them all. So, for example, if the president or the board of Twitter wanted to shut something down, they could just do it with the snap of their fingers. They could pull a Thanos and just say, okay, we're going to kick this person off of Twitter, whatever the case may be. Gab and Gitter work the exact same way. They just choose not to kick people off as easily as a Twitter or a Facebook do. However, a decentralized platform, it uses blockchain technology, and so there is no off switch, so to speak. Once things are uploaded onto the blockchain-based platform, it's run by just computers, servers all over the world, managed by different people, just individuals. So what happens is there can be no consensus, essentially, to censor anything. And so basically anything goes. Now, there are certain Odyssey, for example, is actually a front end to the library blockchain. And so Odyssey is itself centralized on some level, but anything you upload to Odyssey gets put on the library blockchain, so it can't be deleted off the internet. That's the key point. You can always access it. It just can't be removed. And so that's why I think decentralized is the way to go. Now, yes, there are some problems with decentralized from a Catholic perspective, because literally anything goes. So it's probably a lot more easier to put up porn and other harmful things. But most of these services offer like filters to keep this stuff off of there for an individual, so you wouldn't see them. So that's good. But the fact is as Catholics, we're getting thrown into the category of pornographers and other people who, you know, actually we're probably lower than pornographers at this point. And so our likelihood of getting censored at most organizations is very high, but in a decentralized platform is very low. So I would recommend that as Catholics, we try to really get on these decentralized platforms like Odyssey, like Float, like Presearch. We use the tools like that as much as we can. So that's the third option. So again, number one is we stay on the woke platforms, but we moderate ourselves some. We're on the alternative media platforms. We recognize their limitations. We really try to push the decentralized platforms as much as we can. The fourth option is actually the best, but it's completely radically different than the others. You know what that is? We interact with people in real life. We talk to people. We talk to our neighbors, we talk to people in our parish, we talk to people in the community, at the grocery store, wherever the case may be. When we're, as Catholics, we're obliged to share the gospel with others, share the truth with others. And so the best way to do that, and this has always been the best way, is that we share in person, one-on-one. I talked about this a bit in my book, The Old Evangelization, which came out a few years ago, and how we can do this. But I really do believe this is how we really spread the message of Jesus Christ. This is how we let other people know about the gospel of Jesus Christ, about the Catholic Church, is one-on-one interactions with family members, with friends, with neighbors, with those we come in contact with. Because number one, it can't be censored. And number two, it's far superior to anything you do online. I might tweet something that might be true, that might get thousands of likes, something like that. But that's not going to be as effective as just talking to my neighbor about Jesus Christ, about the Catholic Church, about whatever the case may be. That's going to be far more effective in actually making an impact on that person. It's not to say we shouldn't be on social media, but what it's saying is let's have a priority that our communication with people in real life should be our priority, not communication on social media. And so this is, now I will say that even this isn't without its risks, because obviously, as people know who work for companies that are larger companies, if you try to talk about, for example, transgenderism to a coworker, you could easily get fired. You get disciplined at the very least, or you could get fired. If you're a college professor and you don't use the approved pronouns, you could get sued. You could get kicked out of your job. And so I'm not saying there aren't any problems, there aren't any limitations to this, but I do think they're much less so, especially outside of a work environment. You can talk to people in person. I think that's the best way. So again, let's do all we can on social media. Let's promote the decentralized platforms. But most of all, Catholics, let's talk to people in real life. I think that I might sound like a boomer at this point, even though I'm Gen X. I might sound like a boomer saying this, but I really do think that's our most effective way. Because then what we do is really start to change the culture, and people start to really understand how what's going on in the culture in a much deeper way than they would by any tweet, any post on Facebook. You know, I was just reading, let me just end with this. I've been reading a book about the White Rose movement in Nazi Germany. For those who aren't familiar with that, it's a group of college students who they created leaflets opposed to Hitler in the middle of the war. And they were caught, they eventually killed a number of them. Sophie Scholl and her brother Hans Scholl are the most famous of them, but there's Willy Graf, there's Alexander, I forget his last name. But it just inspired me. They lived in the most censorious society that you can live in, Nazi Germany, in the middle of World War II. And yet they were still committed to telling people the truth. And they were committed so much to telling people the truth that they're willing to die for it. And the beautiful thing is six of them were killed, beheaded, and all six of them went to their deaths just praising God and being thankful that they did what they wanted to do in life. One of them even said something to, I think it was Alexander, I can't remember his last name. One of them actually said before he died, like, I wouldn't want my sentence to be commuted because of the fact I feel like I've done what I was called to do in this life. And anything after this just wouldn't be worth it anymore. And so he was happy to die for the sake of telling the truth. That should be our inspiration as Catholics in which we live in a increasingly censorious environment. Obviously, we don't live in the level of Nazi Germany, but Nazi Germany didn't get like that overnight. It took time to grow into what it became. And so the same thing I think is happening here, where we're getting more and more censoring anything that goes against the narrative. And it's becoming more and more dangerous to say certain things that are not allowed, but that are true. And so as Catholics, let's look to people like the White Rose movement as inspirations to always proclaim the truth. Yes, we can use some prudence and stay on Twitter by not saying certain things at times, but ultimately we have to proclaim the truth, and we have to do it one-on-one to people we know more than anything. And so let's just use that as inspiration, the White Rose movement, as an inspiration to us to be willing to speak the truth no matter what, and go to whatever length we need to in order to tell other people about Jesus Christ, about the truth, about his saving gospel, and about the Catholic Church. Okay, well, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. So for those who watch live on Odyssey or Float, I appreciate it. And those who are just listening, I appreciate that too. Hopefully this won't be censored at any platforms that we put it on. Next time, I'm sure we'll be back on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. But until next time, everybody, God love you.